Each year, over 500,000 kids spend time in foster care across the U.S., and making sure they're well taken care of takes a village. I'm Erin Lindstrom, and this is Foster Care Aware, a production brought to you by Tidewater Friends of Foster Care. If you've had it on your heart to become a foster parent, a volunteer, donor, advocate, or just want to learn more, you're in the right place. This episode of Foster Care Aware is brought to you by Kids, Kin, and Caregivers, whose mission is to promote the health and well-being of kinship families through a broad range of comprehensive services. You may be wondering, what's a kinship family? Kinship care refers to the care of children by relatives or, in some jurisdictions, close family friends, often referred to as fictive kin. Kids, Kin, and Caregivers provides comprehensive services, including educational seminars, support groups, activities and services for children, tweens, families. They also provide holiday assistance and linkage to needed resources and services. They also help with advocacy, parenting classes, parent coaches, and provision of needed resources. So it's a ton of ways to connect for kinship families to really have wraparound support. The majority of their services are provided to kinship families at no cost to the family themselves. So if you are a kinship family who desires support, or if you're someone in the community who is looking for a volunteer opportunity with an amazing organization, reach out to Kids, Kin, and Caregivers for more information. You can give them a call at 757-434-5162. You can send an email to kknc@cox.net, or you can check out Kids, Kin, and Caregivers on Facebook. Most importantly, if you are a kinship family and you are listening to this, please know that you are not alone. There are others on the same journey, and Kids, Kin, and Caregivers is here to support and encourage you in any way they can. Hey, welcome back to Foster Care Aware. I'm Erin Lindstrom, and I am joined by Audra Bullock, the founder and director of Tidewater Friends of Foster Care.
Hi there.
And today we have with us John Murray of Families First of Virginia.
How you doing?
Welcome. This conversation, I am so excited to kind of dive into all of this and to have John with us today. So to start us off, John, can you tell us a little bit about your organization and yourself? Why do you choose to do this work?
Okay. Families First Virginia is a private agency that provides therapeutic foster care placements and non-treatment foster care placements for children throughout Virginia. So we provide that case management services, and we combine that with a clinical focus. And then we also do reunification training for children transitioning back home, possibly going to a relative or possibly another adoption home outside my agency. And then we also are now transitioning into parent coaching. Those are our three main components of what we provide as a private agency. Your question, why? That's a long story, but I'll try to make it quick. I never picked this line of work. That's not something that I was even thinking about. I worked with the homeless for 4 years in Roanoke, Virginia. I got kind of burned out, and I stumbled into foster care. And I would say within 6 months of working with the children, I found my niche was, I thought was the children, but it really was the families. And I've been hooked now for over 30 years. You believe that? 30 years. That connection of being in a room full of families that want to give, that have so much to offer, who not just raise awareness of what's going on in the community, but actually a part of solving problems. That's just amazing to me. I still get amazed every single time I meet a new family. The willingness, if anybody's thinking about bad news, think about foster care. There's a lot of great news about families just stepping out of a fog, if you will, just willing to take a child who's really needing to understand healthy attachments and unconditional love, combined with some different approaches that actually help them heal.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. So I've had the pleasure of learning from you directly. And one thing I know, and even going through other trainings as well, is that you have a very unique way of teaching prospective parents that includes the PRIDE training, which is part of Virginia's curriculum. But you also talk a lot about trauma and the brain. Can you share more with us about what that means and why is that important to the way that you're teaching and preparing families?
That transition for me happened through exposure of some trainings that I went to a long time ago, almost 20 years ago. But looking at impact, what happens to children? Why are you seeing what you're seeing? And then looking at the system itself, It's designed to focus on behaviors. It's a medical model that actually measures behaviors and decreases of behavior, hopefully, if things are going as we would like for them to. But that's really not the target. And that's what bothered me. Like, is the target about behaviors about compliance? Is it really about good manners and following directions? Or is it really about setting an environment where children can heal? Once I was exposed to understanding about what children actually go through neurologically, it made a whole lot more sense to me. And then that gave me a vision of teaching parents about understanding what they're actually experiencing in the moment. Could they truly know what the target is? Like in my training, you have to know there are specific parts of the brain that is your job to cut on, not just address the behavior, but you've got to cut certain parts of the brain on. And there are really scientific techniques that have been proven over a long period of time now that actually stimulate certain parts of the brain. And that could be the hippocampus or sensory cortex or prefrontal cortex. And those three components are really the key of children learning a different way of responding to situations and teaching self-regulation. Look, the last thing I'll add to that, a child's brain doesn't heal normally without a family. Just not possible. And then the other component of that, there's a part in the hypothalamus that produces something called oxytocin, which is a peptide that helps you deal with stress. That part of the brain won't develop if not exposed to an adult in a caretaker role for a period of time. That parent actually has to know how to be calm and regulated and respond to children's needs, not just behaviors. If they're exposed to that, then children start to learn over a period of time what they're supposed to do when they're stressed out, and they can learn how to soothe themselves.
That's incredible, John, because that's such a different approach, I think, than, you know, what I received as a trained foster parent. And it puts us in a kind of a concrete way with a path forward through a lot of what are very challenging behaviors that we're not privy to when we get a placement, right? We don't know the extent of the developmental trauma that's happened over the course of years in important developmental cycles that leads to these triggers that all of a sudden it's like, these kids are going off the rails. And, you know, a more traditional approach is kind of a, not corporal punishment, but it's a isolation. It's a, you know, if you don't do this, then I'm not going to spend time with you. And what you teach is that a healthy regulated brain can help actually heal an unregulated brain, but you got to be open to look past the behavior and sit with a child that's in distress. And many of us, and I've been guilty of this myself, is I get triggered because the child is triggered and I'm like, I don't want to do this. And I've got this blocked parenting, and it's the opposite. You've taught me that in my own home is that, you know, you have to run into what seems like a fire in order to put it out. And a lot of us don't feel like well-equipped firefighters, right? So tell us a little bit more about some of the techniques that you teach your parents to do just that.
Those were some great statements you just said. Like the concept of understanding beyond what you see. Like if you literally are just in the moment and you only go by what you see, you're really missing the needs of your child. For babies, we get that all the time. Like we don't have expectations that are very high for babies. They look cute. They smell good. We know our role. We don't even think about a baby manipulating us. But for children with trauma history, when we just look at the surface of the behavior, those are only side effects, if you will, side effects of the abuse. Your brain, who's regulated and thinks cause and effect, you're looking to understand what you're experiencing. But yet it's so much bigger than that. And the techniques, I'll give you a real simple technique. One is just something called containment. Containment means you only put a child in an environment they can handle. For again, babies, we know that, right? Real simple. But for a child who has trauma history, what you expect them to be able to handle, they can't. And one, you talk about triggering, like how you were triggered as being around a child who's triggered. Like it's a chain event. We're putting children in environments where they are scared the most. If you think about it from their perspective, what are they scared of the most? They're scared they're going to be abused, scared they're going to be abandoned. And where do we put them? In an environment that looks like, sounds like what they've experienced before. So the containment is when you put a child in an environment and you, for example, let's say a child, you go to out to eat and the child has a meltdown in the middle of a restaurant. Well, hopefully we can go out to eat soon without mask and back to normal life. But if once we get to that point, if the child has a meltdown, we're blaming the child for the behaviors. We're not looking about what is causing the dysregulation inside the brain, which again is the side effect of the abuse. Children who develop normally, they learn self-regulation through the exposure of a loving, healthy relationship that's secure. Well, foster care or adoption doesn't start out that way. We have to prove that over a period of time. So containment is when I take them to the restaurant and they cannot handle it, what do? I leave. I don't punish them. I don't fuss at them. I just say an empathy statement. Like I can see this is a stressful time for you. You try to get them out as quickly as possible. And then you say inside your brain, okay, maybe smaller steps. Maybe I have to go through the drive-through first. Maybe I got to go into a fast food and get in and get out. Maybe I can only go to 7-Eleven for a while. The exposure to other people are triggering for these children. And we take them to these events and situations where we're triggering them. And then when they react to it, we blame them. So the containment is, okay, I make the adjustment. For babies, we're not taking them out in really loud, stimulating experiences until they get older because we know they can't handle it. Well, maybe I've got a 14-year-old that can't handle it either. So I shrink the world down. I look like a newborn. I treat them like a newborn, I should say. And I put them in a situation where only they'll be successful for a period of time. And then I slowly introduce them to things that might be overstimulating in a very short, methodical, thought out process. And that's what's different parenting. You really got to think ahead. It's not just live your life, love them and care for them and hug them. It's a lot more than that.
I couldn't agree more with that point. It love is not enough. And I think that's really surprising to a lot of foster parents and deflating to a lot of people that go into this uninformed in these kinds of techniques and then feel a sense of failure because, you know, they're sincere with their heart in this. They've opened their home and they're doing everything they can. And this, the child, the relationship is still just not congealing and the child isn't responding the way they think that it is, that it should. And then you don't really know, like you said, this 14-year-old. So you look at a 14-year-old and you expect that they've been taught different things and you expect that they are out in the world and they can handle these situations, but they're not. And one of the things I think that you said to me is time frame. Tell us when you have a child that is like that, about how long does it take to mend these fences to help repair some of this damage and get to a point where you can be out and about and have this healthy attachment?
It takes about 18 months to rewire the brain. And here's what's really cool about that statement. It'll happen on its own if the child's put in the right environment, the right exposure with a parent that is well-educated in knowing how to create that environment. So that and there's really a lot of science behind that 18-month measurement. What happens in children's brains as they get older, they've been slowly introduced to things over time in what we consider normal life. When we're dealing with children who have brain damage, whether we like that statement or not, it's a true statement. I mean, it's true brain damage. Like their brains look physically different and their development is different and their function is different. Like I take two brains, I take this one right here, that has what we consider somewhat of a stable, normal background. And I take this child who has a stressful, abusive background, and this child's brain does not look the same as this child's brain. And our response is over a period of time, that attachment period. This is for adoption, not just foster care. When you're going through that process, remember, a mom has 9 months to attach to the child before the child's born. And then I bring the child, let's say it's adoption. Even if it's newborn, you're behind. You've got to catch up. So that's why we look at that 18-month period of time. That doesn't mean you can't go out of your house for 18 months. It doesn't mean it's like a huge transition necessarily of styles, but it's the concept back to the technique of containment. I only look at what the child's showing me they can handle, and I make the adjustment. It is the parent's job to make the adjustment. It is not the child's job. And that goes back to a lot of people's different styles of training. When you look at behavior management basically means it's the child's job to conform to what the parent and the household says. Not true for the baby, not true for the child that has that abuse history. And so it's your job to make that adjustment. And what frustrated me when I first got in this business, I worked all about behavior modification. I was the king of it. I would formulate consequences, different ways that we can find what they like the most, and that's what we take away, and we find leverage and those kind of things. That's a short return that does not repair. You could get a child to be compliant, which could give you the impression that you're being successful, but in fact, you're not really meeting the needs of the child. And that's what's so much different about fostering adoption. You've got to go back in time to repair what should have happened that didn't. So you've got to look at that 18-month window.
Isn't it true, though, that you should be doing these things for foster care periods, even if you aren't going to adopt the child? Isn't it better for a child to learn a healthy attachment and then go through that period of healing the brain trauma that they've had in the past? And then even, you know, in spite of the fact that they're going to have a sense of loss and grief when they move out of that foster home?
Absolutely. Attachment's the key to everything, if I just want to sum it up. I mean, if you could form a healthy attachment, if you could show them what a healthy attachment looks like. See, some children are so severely damaged, forming that attachment is so difficult, but yet sometimes they have to witness it for a period of time before they can even believe it's true. I had a child, he was about 15, riding in a car, and this was his second placement, but he'd had 17 homes in 1 year, second placement with me. And he turns the radio down after 2 years of being in the home, and he goes, it really could be like this? Like, there are other homes like this, John? Like, he was shocked. I didn't understand what he was saying. I think I was kind of slow that day, not paying attention. And I said, what are you talking about? He got mad. He said, you heard me. There are other people like this. Like, they're not faking it. Like, it took 2 years for him to even believe that someone could love him unconditionally and that someone could love him for the future at the same time. Whenever I get a chance to talk, there's two expressions of love. That unconditional love that people, especially foster parents, they come to me, they got it just oozing out of their pores of unconditional love. It's great, right? But that loving for the future, those are two different styles of expressions of love. And sometimes families get stuck in one or the other. For these children, or for any child, but especially these children, you have to balance those two and know how, in the moment, which expression of love do I need? And those are really tough learning lessons. And I think if the agency is present in their training model, but not just their training, but their support model, parents have an easier transition in understanding both those expressions. So back to your question, the attachment is it. Even if it's temporary, it's life-changing because you prove to the brain it is possible to be loved in this fashion. And it is marked for life. When I say that, I'm going to say it again. It's marked forever. I don't care if a child went to home for respite, what was exposed to it. That mark is stored in that hippocampus for life, and they can rely on that, and it can save them.
I think that's what foster parents and people that are coming to the table to foster that are always afraid of, well, how do I let him go? You know, what if I've done this? And then they go back to a less than ideal circumstance. Have I wasted my time? And I think your words are the reason that people should come. It's that giving, it's that investment in these kids that really does make all the difference. And when I licensed as a foster parent, I recall going down to the informational session and there were so many people sitting around the table that had come from the foster care system that had successful transition to adulthood. And there was some magic recipe, like what you're talking about, that happened for them, that didn't happen for everybody, that they were there to pay forward because it made such a big difference in their lives. And most of those people were not adopted, right? Most of those people went back to their birth family, but they looked on that time in foster care with fond remembrance of the importance to their life. And I would suspect, you know, there are a lot of kids in the system that get bounced from home to home to home because of their behaviors that aren't looking back fondly on foster care. They're saying, I don't want to have anything to do with that. That was the worst time of my life. So if we can bring parents to the table that receive this kind of training, that receive this kind of support and have this kind of experience of really healing, I think we'll end up with a system that not only serves children better, that is more self-sustaining, meaning that most of the people, I think the national statistic is 80% of people who open their home and take a placement close their home within 2 years because it's so hard to do. I think we can change that number. And I think that that's a meaningful statistic to move the needle on.
That number that you're describing to me reminds me why I started my company. Because the impact of what we're doing to families, if we're not focused on the entire experience, this goes back to some of the techniques, like being present in the moment. You've got to be willing to open yourself up, not just for maybe the concern of a child going home and you being hurt, but what did that child give you? See, the vision of that is extremely important. Like most people come, this happened to me, by the way, this is what got me in this line of work. I came to help children and families. What happened? Help me in ways that I could go on for the next 6 hours or maybe longer, that saved me in multiple different fashions of my life. Like I thought I would help them, but it was when I worked with the homeless, they gave me so much. I still feel obligated. And then when I came to work with foster care and I got connected with the families, as I said earlier, I'm hooked for life because I feel obligated what they gave me. Like when I'm looking into the camera and I see your face, a foster parent, there's a connection there that I can barely describe to you because what you're doing for me is giving me purpose of my life and making me feel connected to the community. And I think for foster families, they have to be given a vision of understanding what will come to them. Because that's what's really hooked me. I've seen people become better parents, better spouses, better citizens, better professionals, healthier. The techniques aren't just for the children. This goes back to the question earlier, exposure. When you learn how to create this healing environment, guess who else it's healing? You. And that's what's inspiring to me wherever I go.
That's great, John. And I can attest to everything that you're saying. It's so true. Foster care for me personally has changed everything in my life, literally everything for my husband. It has really given him a new outlook on life and priorities. I mean, major life priorities, and our entire family is better off for it. And these children are wonderful. They are not every day easy, but the impact, the joy that you see when they open up and they love, and to know that you can make a difference in that kind of level is amazing. So thank you for all of you that you do. You're an incredible person.
Yep. So John, for people who may be listening and potentially want to take that next step or learn more about becoming a foster parent, going through your training, what action should they take? How can they contact you?
I want them to call me on my cell phone, 757-450-7329. And that number is 450-7329. Call me day or night, text me, call me. If it's after 10, I might not pick up or answer, but other than that, I probably will. If I get a chance to meet with somebody, and that's what I like to do. I like to meet in person to make sure that my AZ is a good fit and that my philosophy matches well with that particular person or family. And then I'll meet with them and then I'll set up training. We just finished some training right now. We have some families going through home studies. And so it's going to be about a couple of weeks. I don't want to start a new training until I get these families pretty close to being at least started and regularly almost finished with home study. But I want to meet with them. I want to look them in the face. I want to figure out what they're looking for, what their talents are. Probably about an hour for the first meeting. And then I'll schedule training around their schedule. It won't be just fit into a class. I'm in such need of families right now. I'll do nights, I'll do mornings, I'll do afternoons, I'll do a few weekends here and there. I can't do too many. My wife's gonna kill me if I do every weekend. But it's an honor to sit with someone who's willing to consider. I'll be, that's one of the best parts of my job is to meet a new person, sit in a room, and just, I want to hear their story.
Mm.
Every family, I'm the CEO of the company, but I train every family. I know your stories. I want that connection. We're a small company. We like the fact that we're small. And we want that kind of connection.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate that you use the word that consider. Like, you are open to sitting down with anyone who is considering this. And I think that's really important because so many people hesitate to take action because it's such a big commitment. And I don't know if I can. And there are so many unknowns that it can be hard to just take the first step. And so having that kind of the door is open, come have a conversation, I think is really important. Can you share your cell phone number with us?
My cell phone number, 757-450-7329.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Every time you speak about any of this, my heart like starts singing. So super appreciate your time and energy. And thank you sincerely for doing this work in the world.
Yeah, John, you make a difference in this community that is really unparalleled. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
And a big thank you for listening. Foster Care Aware is all about getting the word out about how you can support the kids in care in whatever capacity works for you. And Tidewater Friends of Foster Care is here to support you through the journey. To learn more, head over to fostercareaware.org, where you can join our digital community of Friends of Foster Care and learn more about how you can provide a birthday or holiday gift for a child in care as one of our gift sponsors, stay in the know about upcoming trainings, and help meet the needs of current foster parents and youth as they arise. Whether you want to be a foster parent, volunteer, donor, or advocate, head on over to fostercareaware.org to learn more.